Jake Arrieta has officially retired. Is he an all-time Cubs great? An all-new Locked On Cubs rolls now.
You are Locked On Cubs, your daily Chicago Cubs podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome on in. Happy Thursday to you. I'm your host, Andrew Bellison. This is indeed Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Welcome and thank you for making us your first listen here this morning. We are free. We are available wherever you source your favorite podcast. So please download us today. We'd appreciate it. If you're in the Cubs ball, if you're in a National League Central ball, this is the spot. It's dedicated to Cubs baseball 24/7. Each and every morning. So thank you for making us your first listen. Check us out on social media at Chicago Cubs PA, at Locked On Cubs on Twitter. Love to engage with you guys, so please check us out there. Going to have another MLB wagering tip for you later on today, so check us on Twitter there. Also, check out our YouTube page. We'd love your subscription on YouTube. Locked On Cubs YouTube. All of our shows are posted there as well. We've got some early season Cubs trends, both good and bad, to look into here momentarily. Some pitching injury updates and nuggets. But first, one of the more dominant pitchers we have known in recent Cubs history has officially retired. Can we call him an all-time great? What say you, Locked On family? First and foremost, congratulations to Jake Arrieta on a sensational career. Pitched in the bigs for a long time. World Series winner, as we know. The way he got to the Cubs, as a matter of fact, probably, in my opinion, this could be argued, I suppose, but one of the best trades that Theo and Jed made. If you recall, they flipped Scott Feldman for not only Jake Arrieta, but Pedro Strop as well, from Baltimore in 2013. I mean, those two guys came over. You don't win a World Series without either of those guys. So quite possibly the best trade in the Theo regime, I think it would be a very fair argument to make. But does Jake Arrieta's body of work in the major leagues, especially with the Cubs during that World Series era, make him an all-time great? No arguing that his best years in the bigs came as a Cub. Don't forget, he served two stints with the Cubs, the first obviously being the best. July of 2013, came over at the deadline, lasted until the end of the 2017 season for stint number one. 2015, obviously the best that he ever was. 33 games that year, 22-6 record, .177 ERA, best Cubs pitcher for the season, no doubt. What's more impressive is that he reached that 177 ERA by having a second half earned run average in that 2015 season of 0.75. That's ridiculous. 0.75 earned run average in the second half of that season. Pretty crazy. So after the 15 All-Star break, Arrieta legitimately dominated every single opponent that he faced. It would be his performance in the World Series that most Cubs fans remember, of course. In his two World Series starts against the Indians, he would win both games. Pretty damn good. Obviously, huge reason why the Cubs broke the 108-year spell. The finish was obviously disappointing. He left Wrigley after 2017 season, signed with the Phillies on a four-year deal, never really pitched to that same standard in Philadelphia. And then he came back to the Cubs. And we remember how that all ended. Not very well. Was released last year in August, ending his career with Chicago. So we know nothing is going to top the time he had on the North Side from 2013 to 2017. And nothing's going to top the time that he had probably from May or June of 2015 through the first half of 2016-ish. His 2015 numbers rank him among single season wise the best pitching performances and seasons in Cubs history. You cannot argue that. You would need to look at players during the 1900s to find pitchers with an ERA under 177. I mean, you have to go way, way back in the Cubs record book. Those things help make him a very good pitcher in Cubs history. Is he an all-time great? When you fire that term off, all-time great, I'm going, you're Fergie Jenkins. You're Greg Maddux types. Those are all-time greats. Hall of Fame worthy numbers over a very, very legitimate period of time. Jake Arrieta was as dominant as they came for a very short amount of time. Let's be honest. Is he an all-time Cubs great? No. Do the Cubs win a World Series without him? No. Was he as dominant as anyone in the game for that stretch in the last 100 years? Yes. Listen. Jake Arrieta transformed the role of baseball pitcher into how he approached it as one of the more finely tuned athletes on the field, regardless. And he was doing it on the mound. I mean, you saw his pregame warm-up routine in left field, the push-ups, the stretching. The guy is a human pretzel built of solid muscle and is literally in as good a shape as any baseball player, let alone pitcher, in all of Major League Baseball. However, he still could not sustain utter dominance for more than that season and a half. And I'm not taking away anything he did from the All-Star break in 15 in through 2016, which is where the decline started. Don't forget, in 2016, as good as he was, and as good as he was in the World Series, the decline from 15 was evident. He couldn't sustain utter dominance for more than a season and a half, more or less. Wonderful to watch. Yes. Fun as hell. Yes. Do not win a World Series without him. Yes. All-time Cubs great. No. Didn't do it for long enough. Delighted us. It was as good as it got, but didn't sustain the success nearly as long enough in my book to call him an all-time Cubs great. Jake Arrieta, though, nothing can be taken away from the career he had. Congrats on retirement. Enjoy it. All the best to you and your family. And thank you, because quite frankly, like I said, Cubs do not win a World Series without that man. We talked about his couple no-hitters just the other day. Some very interesting Cubs early season trends, both good and bad offensively, coming up shortly. I want to dive into those. Before we get there, whether she prefers a statement piece or everyday subtle elegance, BlueNile.com has fine jewelry options for every mom. And don't forget Mother's Day. Hear it? It's knocking on the door. Shop high-quality classic diamond earrings, elegant tennis bracelets, or gemstone pendant necklaces right online. If you're looking for fine jewelry, but you're having trouble choosing, Blue Nile has jewelry experts on hand 24/7, available via phone or chat to help you find a memorable gift at every budget. Mark Mother's Day with something enduring: classic diamond stud earrings, elegant tennis bracelets, birthstone pendants, so much more. Visit BlueNile.com today. If you're celebrating the special women in your life, BlueNile.com can easily help you navigate thousands of fine jewelry options at every price point. This Mother's Day, do me a favor here at Locked On Cubs. Give mom something she'll treasure forever with jewelry from BlueNile.com. And Locked On Sports listeners get $50 to $500 off. This podcast exclusive is only good through Mother's Day. Use code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON. Locked On. Plus, every order is insured, ships free, and arrives in discreet packaging that won't give away the surprise. Do that special lady in your life a favor. Go to BlueNile.com today. Locked On Cubs rolls on after this. Welcome back in, Locked On family. I'm Andrew Bellis, and I'm your host. Thanks for being with us today, Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Check us out on social media at Chicago Cubs PA, at Locked On Cubs. Our YouTube page is wonderful. Locked On Cubs YouTube, we would love your subscription there as well. Thanks for making us your first listen today. Wherever you're at, heading to school, heading to work, in the car, train, airport, airplane, out of state, on vacation, we thank you, thank you, thank you for being part of the Locked On fam and tuning in each and every morning. Love the overreactions and underreactions early in the year. We've touched on this. It's only been 11 games. Cubs are 6-5. They split the first two back home here with Tampa. Did some number crunching through the first 9 games of the year. So excluding these first two games against the Rays in which they split, Cubs were, 5-4 through 9 after that 4-game split with Colorado in Denver. So early season trends. Let's first take a look at the numbers themselves. Through those first 9 games, and maybe these were inflated just a tad because of the 4 course field, but team batting average, .281, best in the league. On-base percentage, .364, best in the league. Through the first 9 games, excluding these Tampa games. Slugging percentage, tied for 4th, .447. On-base plus slugging, first, .811. Thank you, Seiya Suzuki, right? Home runs, 8 of them, 18th. Doubles, tied for 1st, 18. Runs, 11th with 44. Some of these numbers, like we said, got boosted a bit because of the Coors Field, especially the doubles, as we saw more than a handful of them this past weekend. And we talked about those big power alleys at Coors Field. Everyone always wants to talk about home run and thin air, but good doubles park Coors Field. But how about that league-leading batting average? And I know it's only, this is through 9 games. I get that. That's also led to a league best on base percentage. Fully aware that this group of hitters makes a lot more contact than what fans have been used to. And that's the point I'm making. Remember the 1,600 plus strikeout or almost 1,600 strikeouts in 2021 as a club? Oh my God. Much different here through the first 9 games statistically. Current Cubs squad is a lot more patient as well. How about a team that's striking out less than 20% of the time, which we love? Cubs currently, through those first 9 games, ranked 7th in Major League Baseball with a 19.6% strikeout percentage to go along with the 7th best walk percentage at over 10%, just shy of 11%. These aren't the 2015 to 2021 Cubs anymore because, let's face it, we saw the strikeouts pile up even during the good years, the World Series years. Guys left on base, couldn't get guys in. Contact was an issue. So even when they were winning, it was still a problem. And early on, I know they've played 11, but for through the first 9 where these numbers were taken from, huge difference, which is really awesome. Up and down the lineup, you see guys making a ton of contact. And we discussed this from the start with the Madrigals, with the Horners, say a Suzuki's humming, Ian Happ, etc. Leading the Cubs, ranking 4th overall in contact percentage in nearly 80%, 79%. So not only are they making more contact than previous seasons, but the offense is also much less likely to swing at pitches outside the zone. Heading into that Monday opener with the Rays, the Cubs ranked 8th in outside swing percentage, only swinging at pitches outside of the strike zone 28.1% of the time. I mean, case in point, look at a guy like Seiya Suzuki. His plate discipline is ridiculously uncanny, and he rarely goes after anything outside of the zone. On the flip side, the Cubs are 5th in Major League Baseball at swinging at pitches inside the strike zone, making contact on nearly 87% of the times they go after pitches in the zone. Sounds like an easy thing, right? If it's in the strike zone, you swing at it. If it's not, you don't. Much easier said than done, but they're doing it here early on this year, and the numbers clearly show how much improved they are in terms of putting the bat on the ball and laying off pitches outside the zone compared to last year when they struck out 10 times a game and even years prior. Again, here's another positive early season trend for this Cubs group. They have a 35.7% hard hit rate, which puts them 6th in Major League Baseball. And their average exit velocity on balls is 89.9 miles an hour, tracked by StatCast, 9th best in baseball. Awesome. As the saying goes, not all contact is good contact. So what's the bad news here? And again, these are super early season overreactions, but it's just fun to dive into these numbers. The change is evident. We preach that all off season, so it's a good thing to see. What's the bad news? Well, here's the awful trend, okay? Cubs hit the ball a lot, but the majority of the time it's straight into the ground. And you know how the game is now. They like to elevate the baseball, right? Through nine games, so through that Sunday game with Denver in Colorado, I mean, the Cubs have the highest ground ball percentage at 51.1%, leading to 14 double plays through those nine games, four more than any other team. So tons of double plays because of the ground balls. And they're hitting them hard, too. Yes, that's going to happen when you have a bunch of base runners on all the time, too. So maybe it, you know, is not super fair to overreact considering it was only a nine-game sample size anyways, but it doesn't take away from the fact that the Cubs hit a lot of ground balls. You might have been extremely annoyed about all the double plays, and for good reason. The Cubs would be essentially, through those nine games, on pace to shatter the single-season record for grounded into double plays. The 1990 Red Sox hit into 174. At the rate they're going, and I know it won't stay that way, 14 through nine games, not a chance in hell, but equate to a 252 double plays over the course of a 162-game season. Surely not going to happen. Surely overreacting at these numbers early on because it's only been nine games. But the contact, up. Hard hit rate, up. Swinging at strikes, up. Swinging at pitches out of the zone, down. Awesome, awesome news. Guys are getting on base, taking their walks, putting bat on ball. Do that over the course of the year. Great things happen. When you're whiffing almost 1,600 times in a season, bad things happen. So really, really awesome to see the change. Even though it's only been a handful of games, there is a lot to work with there. And I just hope the trend continues. The ground ball thing will subside. And listen, in weather like this, when it's cold, windy, maybe hitting the ball down isn't the worst thing in the world either. Plenty more to come here on Locked On Cubs. Some injury news to some very important pitchers that the Cubs are counting on in the 2022 season. Before we get there, I want to thank you again for making us your first listen. We ask that you make your second listen, Locked On MLB. Sully brings you his unique perspective on all the major league news, past and present. It's free and available, just like Locked On Cubs is, wherever you get your favorite podcast. BetOnline.net, your number one source for all of your sports betting needs and information. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs and the start of the Major League Baseball season. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Locked On Cubs continues momentarily. Locked On family, welcome back in. Happy Thursday to you. Hope you're having a wonderful week. It's all Cubs all the time here on Locked On Cubs. Check us out on YouTube, our Locked On Cubs YouTube page. We'd love your subscription there. We post all of our casts on YouTube, so you can look at me and listen to me. Double trouble if you choose. Want to thank you for making us your first listen here this morning. For your next listen, check out the Locked On Now podcast. Recaps of MLB games with analysis from our local experts, taking fans through the season like no other network. Free and available, just like Locked On Cubs, wherever you source your favorite cast. So, injuries obviously inevitable in baseball. It's a long season. It's a grind, especially with the short spring training. And the Cubs have had some noticeable ones, especially in the starting rotation. But the rotation has been pretty good here in the first week and a half of the season. Wade Miley has not participated in a major league game yet. Recall he was brought over from the Reds in a waiver deal way back in November. Set to throw a bullpen in Chicago yesterday, which is actually pretty meaningful. So as a guy actively rehabbing from an injury or building up to the season, he'd essentially be in Arizona at Sloan Park in the facility in Mesa. When the season's already started and a pitcher gets closer to a minor league rehab stint, you often see them join the big league team so the staff there can work with and evaluate where things are with that said pitcher. And then if things look good, the plan can be laid out for the return, debut process, minor league starts, rehabs, etc. So, in other words, if we had to guess essentially where Wade Miley is in building back up stamina and being closer to major league ready, He's probably going to throw for the coaches in that bullpen, see how he feels the next day. And if he feels good, looks good, he could either head out later this week for a minor league rehab stint somewhere, possibly South Bend or in Iowa, or stick around with the big league team to throw some live batting practice sessions first. It's also possible the Cubs would send him back to Arizona to get his first game action in the extended spring training game or another simulated game as well. But I would venture to say if this bullpen that he's tossing is in Chicago, it's probably going to prelude a minor league rehab stint somewhere more local. So really, really good news. If it plays out that way, probably figure on a couple rehab outings for Miley, 30 pitches, then maybe 50-ish, get his legs back under him, so to speak, before Miley then would essentially be ready at the earliest to debut with the big league club. That would put it right around the flip of the calendar from April to May. So roughly the estimate back when the elbow issue popped up in early March, and also right around the time the roster shrinks from 28 to 26. So things are about to get really crunched, but you like to have him back. He's a big part of this rotation. And we saw Mark Leiter Jr. last weekend in Denver. Not great after that first time through the Colorado Rockies lineup. How about Alec Mills? Another piece of the long roll out of the pen and or back into the rotation kind of guy. He had lower back issues coming out of spring training. Probably close to a rehab stint as well. Set to throw live BP in Arizona. He is still in Mesa. That could be his final checkpoint before heading out on a minor league rehab assignment, possibly as soon as this week. Or over the weekend. He's already stretched out to 70-ish pitches, so a little ahead of Miley in terms of getting his legs under him. So it's possible he would just maybe need one rehab start in the minor leagues before joining the big league team. And if so, if he did make that start, say maybe today, tomorrow-ish, he'd be on schedule to take that fifth starter spot on the next turn through. Nobody has announced for Thursday's game, but that's where Mark Leiter Jr. would be if he got another start. And as we alluded to, Leiter did not look good in his outing against the Rockies. He looked really good the first two innings, but once the Rockies had seen all of his pitches and the lineup turned over, it got really ugly. Maybe the Cubs will try to get two or three innings tops out of him here later on today against the Pirates, and then Mills takes the next start in that spot. Depending on how his rehab outing goes, that could be key there. Lastly, away from the mound, how about to the middle infield? Andrelton Simmons waiting on his shoulder, set to do some live batting practice. He's in Arizona still as well. His shoulder's about 85 to 90%, according to Cubs skipper David Ross. But he had a recent setback with his finger. That's what slowed him down on the hitting side. He'll almost certainly get a 2 or 3 day minor league rehab assignment to see some live pitching in game action before being activated. So I don't think he'll join the Cubs until that same time period we talked about with the pitchers. End of this month, early May, same kind of stretch we're looking at for Miley. We should see Mills sooner. Again, roster crunch looms. They shrink, got these guys coming back, decisions to make, but these are key parts up the middle and on the mound as well. What's the deal here? Well, when Simmons is ready to go, we'd think that whatever level of regularity he was going to be starting out of the gate has probably already changed with Horner showing out so well defensively at the shortstop position. You still want Simmons' elite glove in the mix, assuming he's healthy and can make the throws he needs to and defend at that level still. And you want to see Horner moving around to optimize the defense and the matchups, but you're not going to bounce him completely from shortstop at this point because he's been off to a really good start here early on. Much more valuable long-term to keep getting Horner reps there and finding out more about just how good he can be defensively full-time period at the shortstop position. So really good things coming, guys getting healthy. We love that. Cubs got to keep getting on base. They got to keep hitting. We keep our fingers crossed. Until next time, thanks for stopping by Locked On Cubs. I'm Andrew Bellison. We'll see you down the road.